This is LI in the AM with Jay Oliver. News, traffic, weather, and more. 1039 LI News Radio.
All right, it's time for the crime report. It's sponsored by the Soviet County Crime Stoppers. 1-800-220-TIPS. 1-800-220-8477. All calls to be kept confidential. Monetary reward of up to $5,000 issued for information that will lead to an arrest in many a case. Joe Jacklin, of course, retired NYPD sergeant, former commanding officer of the Bronx Cold Case Squad. He's a current adjunct professor over at John Jay College and an author of the bestseller, Criminal Investigative Function, A Guide for New Investigators, third edition. Joseph, how are you?
I'm Jay, how are you?
Doing well. I want to start with the 20th anniversary, Joe, of Columbine. That's tomorrow. Hard to believe, right? 1999. Remember it like yesterday, of course. And you know what really troubled me? This 18-year-old kid from Miami took a plane, went to Denver, reports completely obsessed over Columbine, landed in Denver, bought a gun right off the bat, and I'll tell you, found dead a couple of day or two later. Luckily, they were on this, closed down the schools, districts all over Denver. Tough case. The thing that came to mind, the thing that troubled me, Joe, was, you know, this teenager was on the FBI watch list. Yet she's able to board a plane in Miami, head to Denver. Nobody awaiting her, by the way, in Colorado, coming off that plane. She goes right to the store and buys a gun. How does this happen? You know, we talk about, you know, all these gaffes when it comes to this type of stuff. This is a big one. And if it weren't for, you know, investigations, I get it, but still allowed to board a plane like this?
Yeah, no, this is a failure here somewhere along the line that they have to examine exactly what went wrong here. I mean, to have all this information on somebody and still be able to slip through the cracks, like I said, and you got to kind of worry about the TSA at this point, right? I mean, we have all these terrorist watch lists and everything like that where 9/11 and the like, and then here you have this person who's on a watch list, gets in a plane, flies in a plane, goes to Denver, buys a gun. I mean, talk about failure all around. It kind of lays squarely on the Fed's lap here because they're the ones that run all these operations, specifically the gun checks. So, we have to be concerned that this is a major problem. I mean, it wasn't a bigger story because of the Barr report and all the other things. I mean, this kind of story kind of slipped through the cracks. I mean, it was mentioned on the news, but didn't highlight the failures that we're seeing here, and this is really alarming.
That's why I led off with this. We've seen this before. You know, somehow we have to fix this stuff. FBI, you know, we've seen this before. It's a tough one. It really is. Terrorism and everything else, you know, watch lists, people slipping through the cracks. You can't have this stuff. You know, you must not have this. You cannot allow this nutcase. And she was. Family members even said she had some mental issues big time. You cannot allow someone of that nature to hop on a plane, go cross country, nobody meeting her at the airport, and then goes off on her own and buys a shotgun. Can't have it.
Yeah, no, I don't understand it. I kind of like scratch your head because it's almost as if everybody was doing something else. You know, I mean, it's just, how do you have this many breakdowns in a situation is beyond me, especially with the problems that we have with school shootings. And Columbine, you know, set this whole thing in motion. So, and we were coming up on the anniversary date. I mean, you know, the 19th is, Patriots Day also. You know, it's also seen as a date where, the start of the Revolutionary War, and it has a lot of significance for a lot of people. And, you know, we have to be mindful of these dates and times, too.
And, 12 killed, the teacher, it was a mess. Remembered it like it was yesterday, Klebold Harris, the garb in black coats, and it was a tough one, really set the tone, unfortunately. We'll keep an eye on that one. We'll keep an eye on what happened at St. Pat's yesterday with this 37-year-old college philosophy teacher, Joe. He went into St. Patrick's Cathedral with two cans of gas. He had, lighter fluid, butane lights, and thus arrested at a cathedral earlier this week. Apparently, he booked a flight to Rome as well. I mean, that was a tough one there, but you know what? They're on it.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, the guy was still able to get inside the cathedral there. You know, you would figure with the fire at Notre Dame, even if it was suspicious or not suspicious, they would have had a lot of different police presence at some of these locations and synagogues and mosques all across the city. They usually do those kind of things. You know, let's put it this way. We're glad that nothing happened, but there are a lot of people out there that are unstable. I mean, I'd like to know a little bit more about this guy. Like to know a little bit more about his job and how he was, you know, performing at work and the like. But once again, nobody is, you know, going interviewing former students. And the media got wrapped up so much in this Mueller report, the Barr thing, and everything else that, you know, a lot of the real important news never got told. And, you know, this is the kind of stuff that makes me crazy.
Lots of questions. Why did he book the flight to Rome? And especially after what happened a couple of days after the Notre Dame Cathedral fire, that's why you have a lot of thinking going on here. It didn't appear, according to police, to be terrorist-related. Any links to his actions? Again, questions, though. And I'll tell you, thank goodness this guy was arrested over in Newark when he wouldn't leave, by the way, closing time after a late mass. So good job by authorities, but a tough one. Again, like you said, Joe, how did he get in there? As far as St. Pat's is concerned, tough one. All right, let's go to Uber. I want to really kind of delve a little bit into Uber in general. There was a case, car surfing, and the driver there. That was a tough one, Joe. You remember that one? Three teens, one cracked his head, paid the guy $70 in cash, and later died from his injuries. You know, this was a terrible case. It really is. For this particular driver, Uber in general has been under the spotlight. You know, people have to be careful. Listen, my kids take Uber after a night out. We tell them to be careful, check identification, get a hold of a license plate. We tell them, you know, we had that tough case of that college kid. What was it, Joe, in South Carolina?
Right.
Girl was killed. You know, in Uber in general, you know, Uber is not getting a lot of good press these days. Let's put it that way.
No, I mean, remember when we were kids, Jay, your parents told us never get into a car with a stranger. Right now, people, some of the stranger with an app. It's kind of strange, right, or surreal, however you want to look at it. But, yeah, one of the other things that you could do with the Uber is, when the person pulls up, you could, what's my name, right? They should know what your name is before you get in the car, and that's something that might be another good safety tip. But, yeah, getting back to this car safety thing, surfing thing, yep, the Suffolk District Attorney has him, got him to plead guilty in the death. So we'll see what happens at sentencing. The issue that comes down to is why would anybody allow this is beyond me. But you know, Uber is going public soon, right? So it's going to be a public traded company, and it needs to clean up its act because this is, it's got some bad press recently, and this case was actually from 2018. But, nonetheless, still involved with Uber and a lot of different things. And we've seen sexual assaults. We've seen now murders and car surfing. I mean, I don't understand what goes on in people's minds, Jay. I don't.
I guess that was enough for Daniel Shima, a guy at a Huntington station, and pled guilty to second-degree manslaughter. He'll get, 10 months? Boy, I'll tell you, not a tough price to pay for a death. Terrible judgment on his end, really was. You know what? Be careful of the Uber stuff. That's what we tell folks. As Joe said, well done there. Make sure you get the name. Make sure they're in the right spot. License plate, ID, the whole thing. Make sure they know your name if you're getting into one of these cars. Too many incidents. Too many questions. All right, let's move to the NYPD. Tough incident yesterday. The officer, Joe, in Washington Heights, 4:30 or so in the afternoon, reports of gunfire. Officer pulled up, pierced his vehicle's windshield in a confrontation. Suspect is dead. This 5-year veteran, though, is in tough condition. Good spirits. What do we know? Anything the latest condition-wise, Joe?
Well, he was shot in the arm, and it looks like he's going to make a full recovery, but they're going to, take a a while to make sure, because even, you know, you get shot in the arm or the leg, people always think that it's not a life-threatening thing, but you have major arteries in both your arms and your legs. And if that one gets hit or pierced or nicked even, you can bleed out in the matter of minutes. So it's just, you know, it's quite fortunate that this officer survived. And, you know, the suspect is dead, and there's going to be a probe into the next shooting about what took place, and there might even be video of this. It happens in daylight. So, I mean, there are witnesses. There are plenty of video surveillance, I'm sure. And, you know, we'll piece this together, and we'll learn a little bit more about it. But this is a couple of incidents recently in New York City also harkens back to some of the bad old days. And you kind of think about some of the policies and some of the things that have been enacted over there. You start to question them. Well, I've been questioning them all since they've been put into it. And now I think a couple of years into this administration, we're starting to see the you know, what exactly is going on there. But listen, it's a tough job. It always was. And it's dangerous at any time.
Washington Heights, not great. We know it. And hopefully a speedy recovery. Tough one. Shot, arm, leg. You never know. As you mentioned, you could bleed out, break out for more arteries, of course. But all in all, we certainly have plenty of prayers going here. Joe Jacklow on the crime report. Joe, let's go to this case nearly, 40 years ago, 38 to be exact, Central New York. Federal investigators now have offered a $20,000 reward, hopefully to solve a case. A woman from Long Island went missing in Central New York, college kid. Tammy Mahoney, Joe, you've read it, seen hitchhiking in Oneonta in 1981. She was from Farmingdale, 19. Officials believe she was raped, killed after attending a party on Oneida Nation, a tribal land property. And body never found, Joe.
No, never found. I mean, this has been a cold case that's been on the radar for a long time. One of the problems is that it is on, you know, tribal land, and the tribal police have their own police department. And because of the fact that it's a missing persons case, and you know, it's very difficult for federal authorities. I mean, they can go into the tribal lands and take over investigations, specifically murder and stuff. But there are rules that you have to deal with the tribal council and the like. And they believe that the body is there. They just don't know where. So hopefully the money will make somebody come forward and, you know, say something. It's been a long time, but you know what? People are much older now. People have, you know, that could be somebody who has, you know, is ill or you know, has found religion over the last couple of years, and this has been bothering them, and this is why we, you know, in cold case investigators, put this kind of information out there. It's a great tactic. The money is definitely something that can generate leads. And you know what? I think that, you know, all cold cases, they should have some sort of Facebook pages from the police departments or on the department's website. There's a lot of things that police departments can do in order to get information, not only on a case like this, but of the thousands of open cases across the country that that are unsolved. I mean, we're looking at about 7,000 cold cases every year in this country.
No question. And by the way, the Oneida Nation has matched that $20,000 as far as rewards. So they are cooperating, and good to see that. And hopefully, you know, hopefully they'll get a break in this case. It's been nearly four decades. Joe Jacklow on the crime report. Let's move to this crazy case, Joe. You sent me a link yesterday. Good job. An airport customs inspector, a guy from where? East Meadow, charged in Brooklyn federal court. Why? Stealing cash from handbags. Nothing is sacred. I'll tell you, even when you go to an airport to check in, know your surroundings. From handbags, this guy was stealing cash, checking in baggage at JFK. Passengers, all, you know, we're all distracted when we pull up, and then, you know, you get to the counter, you get to the guy outside. But this 39-year-old admitted he stole $100 bills from handbags, mostly female passengers, over the past year. Unbelievable.
Yeah, no, this is when I first started, because it angers you too, because, like, you know, you everybody's going on vacation, you're excited, and you know it's difficult to make sure that, because everyone's excited about going on a trip, that you keep track of all your personal items. But it's very important, you know, keeping your head out of the phone and watching what's going on. You know, everybody's got to go through these checkpoints. Everybody's got to have their, you know, basically stripped down and your bags gone through and the like. But all I can say is that, you know, try to keep some of that money you know, hidden or secreted inside your wallet or pocketbook to make things difficult. Unfortunately, you can't trust anybody these days, and it's important that we remove the temptation, because there are people, unfortunately, that slip through the cracks through the hiring process and then, you know, wind up on these jobs, and we don't know how long this has actually been going on. But, you know, there have probably been lots of complaints, and they might have done a little test on this guy and see what happened, and that's how this whole thing unfolded.
That's the key. We tell you all the time, nothing is sacred. As Joe said, you go on a vacation, you know, your mind is somewhere else. You just want to get on a plane, and all of a sudden, you know, you get to your destination, you look in your personal belongings, and lo and behold, you know, you're short of the cash. Tough one. But good job there as far as the investigation is concerned. Joe Jacklow, the crime report. Tough one, Joe, here with this more than a year. A retired priest died of his injuries, a home invasion. He suffered it during a home invasion. Tied up for at least, 3 days? And now police are still on the hunt for whoever broke into the priest's Shelter Island home. So, you know, once again, hopefully the public will come through with something here to give information regarding Reverend Paul Wenkura, an 87-year-old, by the way. It all happened last year. Stole jewelry, valuables from him. The guy was tied up 3 days. Tough case.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, Shelter Island is a little, you know, we all know where Shelter Island is. We know it's kind of secluded from everybody else, so it's generally somebody probably on the island developing leads. I mean, I listen, working these cases for a number of years with the cold case guys in the Bronx, one thing I do know is that most of the time we know who the suspect is. It's just that they lack the evidence in these cases. You know, you can't go into court and say, we know it's this guy. You have to have you have to build your case around that and prove it. But sometimes it's more difficult and challenging than you see on television. So it's great that they're still out there doing this and still going out there and looking for help. Sometimes you got to just keep on bombarding the public with this information, and hopefully that something can break. You know, there could be, if there was any arrests on the island, they'd be debriefing prisoners and that kind of stuff, looking for information specifically about that crime, because it's such a small community. A lot of people know what's going on. Kind of like Oak Beach, right? Everyone in Oak Beach knows what's going on. It's just that what do we got to do to get them to give out that information about what's happening on the island is really important.
Small community. I hope something is caught in this case. Small community, secluded, as you mentioned. You know, listen, hopefully a break, no question, in Shelter Island. Let's get to this road rage deal. An East Islip man arrested, apparently pointed a BB gun at a motorist during an incident on the Southern State. Happened yesterday in North Amityville, Joe. But an 18-year-old, this Nicholas Holyfield, now will face some charges here. You know, once again, you got to be careful. You never know, a BB gun in your face. And, you know, road rage, we talk about it a lot, too.
Well, listen, if anybody has not seen that gun, I encourage them all to go online, go to, you know, the Newsday website, and however you find this. The gun, I mean, anybody, if you pointed that out with a police officer or somebody else who was armed with a gun, the kid's getting shot. So, I mean, it's as simple, as plain and simple as that. The gun looks real. You wouldn't have time to be able to determine that. But, you know, and think about the problems you could cause, right? So he pulls out the gun, or people are driving, somebody could lose control of their car. I mean, there is so much reckless conduct here that you don't even know where to begin. And it's for somebody to do something like this, it's kind of like premeditated almost, with respect that he had this BB gun in the car for specific things. And I'd be asking the public, if I was the police commissioner out there, I'd be asking the public, has this ever happened to you before? Because I guarantee you there are other cases out there where this guy's done the same thing. And have everybody come forward and then just pile on it and teach a lesson to this kid, but also others, that this is not acceptable.
It is not, no question. Tough one. Joe Jacklow on the crime report. A couple of more, Joe. Listen, I highlighted this story yesterday, a very tough one with this Suffolk County correction officer. Don't forget now, charged earlier in the month with sexually abusing a boy for, 9 years, has been indicted in connection with abusing a second kid on Long Island. So this second alleged victim, Joe, came forward at the hearing the news reports about this Robert Weiss, his initial arrest, I guess. according to the DA's office. And now authorities are looking into if there are additional victims. Continue to urge anyone who believes they or others were harmed by Weiss to call police. You know, you think there'd be a vetting process a little bit better for this guy. Two times now, who knows, probably more. And let's not forget, this is a guy who, you know, it's hard to believe. This is a guy who is a foster parent, has five sons, foster and adoptive parent, Joe. Hard to believe. A foster parent, by the way, for 15 years, adopted five kids. They're in their, you know, 20s and stuff now, but there's a pending case in South Carolina where he was arrested, I think it was 2016, on charges that he sexually abused another kid. I'll tell you, Robert, it's a tough case. It really is.
Yeah. No, and this is exactly what I was just mentioning before, right? Reaching out to the public and finding out if there are other potential victims. I mean, it's not only that. The story gets even worse than that. When they executed the warrant on his home, they found illegal firearms. They found like 50,000 rounds of ammunition and a stolen bulletproof vest. I mean, this was one real bad guy. I mean, what else was going on there? We don't know what the conditions of inside the house was, but I'd be interested to find out exactly what, if there was a basement or an attic or anything like that. And you just hope that the forensics teams go through that location with a fine-tooth comb and find all these foster kids and interview them and get them, ask them to come in and give any statements, because this is something or somebody who just, this isn't their first time, right? I mean, this can be going on for decades with other kids, too. And you might even think about excavating the property if there are people that are unaccounted for. I mean, it sounds crazy, Jay, but we've seen this before.
That's crazy. And this is a guy who worked for the county, no less. A foster parent, again, that stands out to me. 15 years, five adoptive kids. You know, he did the right thing then, but, boy, I tell you, behind everyone abusing boys. You know what? That's a tough case. It really is. And you're right. 100%. Maybe the vetting process has to be improved. I don't know. We've seen it before, though. Joe, one more I got time for. A sixth alleged MS-13 member with a plea not guilty during the week. Murder charge in a December slaying. Remember that whole thing? Nassau Community Center it was. You know what? The 13-year-old girl acted as a lure. Remember the case before the killings, drawing a 23-year-old and a 17-year-old, separate locations. Other gang members were hiding with weapons. We've seen this story play out before, you know?
Yes. You know, and here we go, though. Every week there's an MS-13 story on Long Island, whether it's something new or it's one of the old things that keep on bubbling up. Court cases and sentencing and the like, and it just keeps on coming in the news cycle, and it just seems like it never ends. And this is the kind of fear that causes for people, especially living in the neighborhoods that are most affected by this, and that like this is never going to stop. This MS-13, and it's designed to be in perpetuity. So we know exactly what's going on behind behind the surface, so to speak, but. Every week there's a new thing going on here on Long Island with gangs and MS-13 specifically. But you kind of shake your head because we're not even going to get through the whole thing again about what's happening, about all these immigration programs. But it is what it is, Jay. You kind of like throw your hands up.
And that's why you can never let the guard down, Joe. You can't. We talk about it all the time. You know, listen, these issues on accompanying minors and everything else, they better fix it in Washington real quick. Can't thank you enough, my friend. Happy holidays. Enjoy the weekend. Stay dry. And we'll talk to you during the week.
Take care. Have a great one.